KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, members of the International Pacific Halibut Commission couldn't come to an agreement on Pacific halibut catch limits for 2018. Now they're looking at establishing an interim plan to bridge their differences, at least for a few years. Then a research biologist with the National Marine Fisheries Service looks at shallowing of the seafloor in the Chicnik area and what that means for salmon habitat. That's coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
U.S. and Canadian members on the International Pacific Halibut Commission, or IPHC, met earlier this month in an effort to resolve their differences over how the commission distributes Pacific halibut among its regulatory areas. The commission shocked the fishing industry in January after it could not agree on catch limits for 2018, bringing years of disagreement to a head. Canadian commissioners and fishermen say the IPHC's annual stock assessment doesn't accurately reflect the health of the stock in Area 2B off the coast of British Columbia and have argued for higher catch limits. This year's stock assessment suggests that halibut along the west coast are on the decline, and U.S. commissioners say Canadian fishermen are over-harvesting the resource while the U.S. fishermen are taking cuts. The idea behind this month's unofficial work session was to begin talks about an interim plan to distribute the resource. Here's U.S. Commissioner Bob Alverson.
We're looking for a three-year interim commitment for both sides before we institute a coast-wide harvest strategy, which is supposed to be implemented here in 2 to 3 years. So in that interim fix, hopefully we can come to an agreement of how much fish is supposed to be in 2B and the other areas.
IPHC staff was on hand to explain the current system it uses to convert summer survey results into its annual stock assessment. Alverson says the conversation was productive, but did not result in any concrete proposals.
I'm kind of in wait and see of what the Canadians are going to suggest to us, since it's their area that is in dispute. We're not disputing, you know, the apportionment in the other U.S. areas.
None of the three Canadian commissioners could be reached in time for this story. According to an IPHC press release, commissioners did agree to meet on the issue again. Alverson says those meetings might take place in June and late August. He said the topic will also likely be discussed at the commission's annual work session in September, where commissioners will receive preliminary results from the 2018 summer survey. Commissioners hope to form an interim plan by its annual meeting next January.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund
and by
the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. AMSEA.org or 907-747-3287.
A research fisheries biologist is looking at how changes in water depth in Chicnik connect to salmon habitat in the area. KMXT chatted with Mark Zimmerman at the National Marine Fisheries Service about what might be causing shallowing waters. Can you talk about how you started looking into shallowing waters in Chicnik?
Yes. For my job, I am making fish habitat maps in the offshore areas of Alaska. And the primary data source that I use are the original charting surveys that were done by the National Ocean Service to make their charts. And these original charting surveys have a lot more data on them than the navigational charts that most people use for driving around in their boats. And I was looking at some of the reports that were filed with those surveys in the Chicnik area in the 1990s, and they mentioned that there had been some significant shallowing since the original surveys were done in that area in the 1920s. And for the shallowing, it was not noted in the reports what the cause was. So part of this project was to both investigate if I could quantify the shallowing that they had noted from the 20s to the 90s, and then to try to figure out what the cause was.
Is this something that you mainly noticed in the Chicnik area, or is this common in other coastal areas in the state?
This was just in Chicnik. There are some places of shallowing elsewhere, but mostly you'll see reports of things being a little bit shallower or a little bit deeper. But in Chignik, there were many neighboring maps that all reported the same thing. It was all getting shallower, and that was really unusual.
Okay, and so why should we be concerned about shallowing waters in Chignik?
Chignik is really important for producing some very healthy salmon runs, and the juvenile salmon, the smolts, when they leave the freshwater lakes, they need shallower water to adjust to the ocean environment and to go out and become adults. And so as the water is disappearing, they're going to have less and less of that habitat.
Okay, so you noticed a connection between the current state of the waters and these historical maps called smooth sheets?
Yes.
Okay, so what is a smooth sheet?
So the smooth sheet was a map produced during the original charting surveys. A lot of these surveys were done in Alaska in the 1920s and 1930s, and they contain what are called depth soundings on them, which are simply a record of a depth at a certain location.
What differences did you notice as far as numerical data goes?
Well, the main differences were that in the older surveys, the vessels went closer to the shore, and so you would see their depths, which are recorded as numbers on the map, getting closer and closer to the beach. But by the time those surveys were repeated in the 1990s, the survey boats could not get anywhere close to the shore. They had to stay in the deeper channels. So there was a big mismatch between the aerial extent of the original old depth soundings and the new depth soundings.
So when you noticed the data and the significant difference, you started investigating this.
Yes. I had to get help from experts in other fields. One of the first people I contacted was Greg Ruggeroni. He's from a private consulting firm called Natural Resources Consultants. And he has done research on salmon runs in Chignik for a very long time. And he had noted previously that one of the Chignik lakes has been impacted by deposits of increasing volcanic silt. And that has, in effect, lowered the amount of water that's in the upper lake at the Chignik lakes. And that is making it difficult for the salmon to reproduce in that lake.
Yeah, could you elaborate a little bit on how volcanic ash plays into those shallow waters that are important to salmon habitat?
I don't know that much about it, but from what we can tell, it's just covering a lot of the landscape in the Chignik area, and it's been there for, in some cases, thousands of years since very large caldera-forming eruptions occurred. And we think it is just eroding from the hillsides with wind and rain and snowfall and trickling down through the watersheds into the bays where it's being deposited. And in bays like Mud Bay and Chignik Lagoon, there are significant eelgrass beds that the U.S. Geological Survey had mapped. And we think that the roots of the eelgrass are serving to help entrap the sediment, and those bays are seeing more sedimentation than the other bays.
What's the role of eelgrass in salmon habitat?
Eelgrass has been historically seen as a very positive thing for salmon and a lot of other smaller species, which use it to hide and feed and survive. And there are some massive eelgrass beds in this part of Alaska. And it's very good for fish and invertebrates, and birds use them for feeding too. But what it seems to be happening in Chignik is that there is so much sedimentation that these areas are becoming too shallow for the regular fish habitat use.
Okay. What other bodies of water in Chignik have you noticed shallowing of water?
Well, as I said, there was Chignik Lagoon and Mud Bay. Castle Bay also had some shallowing, as did Hook Bay and Kujulik Bay. And the sixth study site, Anchorage Bay, actually appeared to have deepened over time. And we did not have an explanation for why that site behaved differently, but it is more exposed, and we wondered if that could subject it to erosion instead of the other sites, which are somewhat enclosed, which might serve to retain more of the sediment.
What's the long-term risk? Like, how concerned should we be?
Well, this has been going on for a very long time. The rate of change is very, very slow. We were able to see a significant difference over a 70-year time span, so nothing's going to be that different tomorrow than today. But in general, it is a negative force on those salmon being able to reproduce in that area.
Should we go in there and do something about it?
I don't know the answer to that. And what I wanted to do was to present this information so that managers who work in that area can be aware of this and make decisions.
What else are you researching right now? What else is your area of interest?
Well, my main area of interest is in working with these old original survey maps called smooth sheets and editing them in my mapping program and putting them together to make regional compilations of what the seafloor looks like in different areas of Alaska. So far, we have published four big seafloor maps. The first was the Aleutian Islands. The second was a map of Cook Inlet, and then Norton Sound and the Central Gulf of Alaska. And we've been working on other regions to publish those seafloor maps and to try to do some analyses, some interpretations of those maps.
And do you have any other papers you're working on or anything that you kind of are on the cusp of investigating?
I have one paper which is nearly done, which is a map of the Bering Sea slope and the identification of the different canyons in that area. And we have another one looking at the western Gulf of Alaska, which includes Shelikof Strait. And we're trying to show more detail on Shelikof Strait because the bathymetry is important for the pollock reproduction. There's a big stock of pollock that reproduce in March in Shelikof Strait.
That was NIMS Mark Zimmerman talking about shallowing waters and how it connects to salmon habitat.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KBBI's Aaron Bolton and Homer. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.